This is Dan Russell's Sports Talk, Canada's longest-running radio sports show. Here again is Dan Russell.
For our final hour on our flagship station, CKNW, and before we go any further, I want to thank Heath Morgan for his work tonight. I'm getting the 10th anniversary special, but also such a pleasure working with him the last number of years. He joined us during the Vancouver Olympics. He's become just terrific and huge part of our program. Thanks to Scott and Snell, who produced this show many years ago. 1 hour remains in the history of Sports Talk on CKNW. As one of the callers said the other night, our show is kind of turning the sports light out for CKNW. And personally, I'm honored to have been a small part, the last part of the sports legacy of CKNW. People like Jay Paul and Jim Robson and Tom Larsha, and of course, the Big Al, Barney and McCray and Jim Cox and Huey and Hodge and Lee Powell. I mean, the list goes on and on. They were the major reasons this station became the sports powerhouse that it is. We'll turn off the lights, or at least dim them to a large degree, at the end of this hour. And you'll hear our theme song one more time at the end of this hour on Sports Talk. Stay with us. More to come. 1 hour left. That's it. Right after this.
Congratulations, Dan. It's Louis Pisagli of the BC Lions. The sports market's never been the same since you guys have been on the air. Keep up the good work, and I'll keep listening to you.
Welcome back to Sports Talk's 10th anniversary special. The BC Lions had just moved inside when Sports Talk hit the airwaves a decade ago. We celebrated the 1985 Grey Cup with them. Since then, the off-field stumbles have outnumbered the on-field fumbles.
Our guest is former BC Lions quarterback and great Joe Capp. He is joining us from California. We're talking football.
Well, I know you have a very special place in your heart for Vancouver. You know, we've even heard some speculation, some rumors that you'd like to get back into the CFL, maybe with the Lions if an opportunity came up.
Well, Dan, I read a couple of sports columns, and I don't know if we can believe what we read in the paper.
I think he's so unprofessional, and the way he talks to people. He doesn't talk to people, he talks down to people, and I don't like all that rah-rah Dale Carnegie crap.
Former player personnel director Roy Shivers, December 14, 1989.
Hey, I don't want to work for the jerks. Plain and simple.
Well?
He gave me a bunch of bullshit the other night, you know.
What kind of, how did they present this to you?
Well, check this out now. He tells me, he calls me about a week ago, and he tells me, you know, Larry Carrick's going to make all the decisions. Okay?
Right.
So he goes, Larry will be in the office Tuesday. Call Larry and you guys get it straight. I'm an old quarterback and I'm not going to put my hand in it, but every now and then, you know. Okay, Tuesday comes. I call Kaharik. Called him twice. You know, he doesn't call me back, so I don't call anymore, you know. Okay, so last night, he called, Cap calls here. He goes, I thought you were going to call. I go, hey, I called, man. I called twice. I talked to the secretary, Deanne, told her that I was supposed to call, talk to Larry Kaharik. And to call me whenever he gets in. I say, I don't get any call. I say, and you guys don't call me. So that kind of lets me know what the deal is.
Former BC Lions owner, Murray Pesum, July 31, 1992.
You think I can keep losing game after game, and you tell me that it's a difficult position to put him in? I don't agree with you. He is responsible for the team. He's got to produce. He and Quinter. I don't see them bringing in the players. I don't see anything. You know, and no one can tell me. Do you call that a fine team out there now?
No,
it's like a pickup team at high school.
Former BC Lions general manager Joe Gallant, September 22, 1988.
All right, now some of those things, and I'll get you to react to them, that the BC Pavilion Corporation has had to step in to help meet the payroll.
That is something that I believe you're going to have Mr. Hogan on. He's going to address that. We have components of our financial recovery plan. There's several components to that, and they're all fitting into place, and they're all working out the way we had anticipated.
Are the losses going to be around the $4 million mark if things don't change?
No.
Sports Talk at the Bayshore Grey Cup headquarters, November 27, 1987.
I make a comment every now and then. It's like stealing. You know, it's hard to believe that you get paid. It's like you said when I was playing, you know, you're getting paid to do something you really like to do, and it's no different now. it's something that I really enjoy doing. I get to see a lot of games. And my biggest complaint with the CBC is that I would do every single game if they could get me to the game. You know, if there's any physical way to get there, I'll do it.
There's another guy going to join us in a second here.
Pat. Oh, I see him. Here he comes.
Pat Marsden has joined us. Now we've got Ron Lancaster from CBC and Pat Marsden from CTV.
Has he called Edmonton to win?
No, we haven't even got to that stage yet. We're just talking about broadcasting in the Grey Cup
game. Did he say I was great or not?
We're getting to that.
There's no chance that we could get a drink on this show, right?
There's water here. I guess that's not what you had in mind, huh?
Uh-huh.
Sports Talk at the Grey Cup headquarters, November 23, 1990.
Yeah, go ahead. We're on live right now. Okay, ready? Go.
Once again to Grey Cup headquarters, and here's Dan Russell.
In one of these?
Any one of these!
I said I'd surprise you!
You ain't enjoyed that, Jackson, in action for the people's satisfaction on CJOR 600. The man they couldn't can the head with no tread, the dial they couldn't smile. Let me tell you, if you're out there and you're driving home and you got your knuckle up your nose, well, you better start listening, because this is the pre-match build-up for the Grey Cup, and this is where it's all happening. You're talking to Jacko Jackson, the toughest footballer that has ever walked the face of the earth. Let me tell you. Listen to that. There are my fans out there, and of course they're all saying, you want to get a question is, why wouldn't you? It's your show, but you can't yet, because I'm here telling all the people out there that the Grey Cup is going to be one of the biggest games that's ever hit Vancouver. And if you're not thinking about going, well, you better change your mind, because I'm going to be there. Jackson in action, of course, for the people's satisfaction. I come from Australia where men are men and the women are men. And, of course...
The BC Lions had plenty of company with off-field antics. Former NFL star Dexter Manley with Ottawa owner Lonnie Gleiberman.
Thanks for having me.
Now, how did this come about, Lonnie? How is it that Dexter's going to play now?
Well, you know, basically, Dexter can tell you a story why he's in Ottawa.
Well, I thought maybe you asked the most intelligent question first, is what brought this deal together? Now, which one do you want to know?
What brought this deal together?
Well, it's a long story. You have about 40 minutes?
Yeah, we got about 2 hours.
Okay, listen, I'm going to make it real quick, sweet and short. Is that, first of all, the Prime Minister was calling me, Kim Campbell.
Right.
And Bernie and Lonnie, and they're friends. Well, they were very good friends with the last Prime Minister, Brian Mulroney.
Right.
And so I think he made a recommendation that, you know, he was very upset they benched me last year. He called Bernie Gleiberman on several different occasions and wanted to chew raw and smell turn out.
I guess this is the hype that goes with trying to sell a game here, but...
Come on, now what are you doing? You're undermining me. You're trying to embarrass us.
I'm doing my best, because I know that you're on the phone line and you can't do any damage from where you are.
Well, that's okay. I got a couple guys from the ghetto in Houston, Texas. I can...
Go ahead, Dexter.
And let me just reiterate that. You can take that to the bank and cash it, buddy. And this ain't selling no wolf tickets. So if you want to think this is hype, and you send them boys on down here, you just send someone down that you have total confidence in, and just check me out.
Okay, now, let me ask you this, Lonnie. There's, I don't know if you hear, you're getting some heat in some of the local media here. And so you have the final say as owner who plays the game.
We always know that. As owners, we always have the final say.
So
we have the right to veto. It's called veto power, just like the president of the states has. If we don't like a decision being made, we have the right to veto that.
And don't forget that, neither.
Thanks for the support, Dexter.
Yeah, that was big-time support there, Dexter Manley.
We're all needing the hard times, pal. I have a new haircut, young man.
Yeah. So how's practice been this week, Dexter?
You know, it's just a big circus here right now. We've got tons and tons of media here. You know, it's almost, this is bigger than Waco in Texas. You've heard of Waco, David Koresh?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's that kind of deal here.
Lonnie, you're sitting here listening to Dexter, and obviously my listeners are going to be saying here, this is for hype only. I mean, here he's bringing up Waco, Texas. What's he even talking about?
No, no, I think one of the problems we have in the CFL is we can't have fun with ourselves.
Yeah, but
so seriously? No, seriously, it's one of the problems. The USFL...
What do you mean, what am I...
What does Waco, Texas have to do with anything?
You asked me about practice, young man.
It has nothing to do with Waco, Texas.
Young man, you asked about practice. I'm telling you what we're doing out here. We have a bunch of people out here. It's very distracting at times. And so, hey.
Well, why would you take a very serious, serious place like Waco, Texas, and the incident that they had there and try to turn it into fun?
Waco, Texas had a lot of coverage, young man. And that's exactly what we're getting here. And sometimes you get tired of it. You know?
Lonnie is...
That's okay. This guy's too tight. Look here, buddy. We got to go, okay?
You know, basically, I mean, this is...
I don't think I'm being too tight here. I mean, I ask a question, Lonnie.
Yeah.
And he gives you an answer of Waco, Texas. What the heck does that have to do with anything?
I think we're missing the point. The point here is we want to win the Grey Cup. We want to have some fun.
This guy, he knows what he's doing. You know, if you don't know, pal, then you might need to get your new job.
Yeah, well, apparently you've been looking for one for a while, too.
No, I had a job.
Early in the show's existence, Sports Talk listeners were given a first-hand account of one athlete's fall from grace. Derek Sanderson, October 19, 1987.
The reaction we got from the Derek Sanderson interview was really incredible. People had heard that Derek had a problem, but I don't think anyone in our audience imagined just how bad it was.
But that the $1 million for something, I mean, you get when some clown comes along and gives you $2,650,000 to play hockey when I was only making 50 with the Bruins.
So it was $2.6 million to go to the World Hockey.
Yeah, 2.65. Actually, it was two. They offered me 2.3, and I said, well, I don't know. I was drunk at the time, and I was goofing on them, and I said, I don't know. I own a couple of nightclubs here. Fans are good for me. Police are good for me. Got a girlfriend. I said, well, I'm authorized to go as high as $2,650,000. He gave me $350,000 raise in 15 seconds. So I said to him, well, you know. And I knew I had him. I mean, I couldn't believe it at the time. And I said, well, I got to be captain. And he said, okay. And I said, I got to play in the power play. Because I never played the power play at Boston. And he said, well, the money you're getting, you'll never be off the ice. I said, okay. I said, listen, the Bruins traded some friends of mine. I said, I don't want any of my teammates ever traded without my permission. They said, okay. And he wrote it, he's writing it out in paragraphs, and then initially in the paragraphs individually. And I said, well, when I first talked to you guys, you were the Miami Screaming Eagles. I said, you can't move the franchise without my permission anymore. And he said, okay. And I said, you can't sell it either, because you guys are pretty stinky. He says, okay. So I virtually owned the team. And I couldn't believe this. And I had no respect for the management that did it.
You only played, I wonder how many people know this, you only ended up playing 8 games.
Well, some stats are wrong. I've only played 7 games, and that was it. I slipped a disc in my back, and...
And that was it. But of that 2.6, how much did you actually see?
$1.4 million cash.
Was that up front, like the signing bonus? 1.4.
Yeah, so I had a ton of money. Then I made some proper investments. See, I still hadn't gone goofy at that point. I was still aware of what was going on, and I made some good investments, and I worked it up to about $6 million. And then the drinking started, and I was in Philadelphia. I didn't know anybody. So I started drinking a lot more on a constant round-the-clock basis. And then, you know, some clown comes along and You know, one thing leads to another, and it's one party after another. Then I bought the world a drink, and then that was it.
How long did, like, from the time you had $6 million and then you went goofy, to use your term, how long did it take for the money to go?
Well, that was 73. It was all over in 77.
So 4 years, you spent $6 million.
Yeah.
That's hard to do.
You have to stay awake. Cocaine will keep you awake.
Dan, this is George McPhee of the Vancouver Hockey Club extending a sincere congratulations on your 10th year anniversary of Sports Talk. I hope that sometime over the course of the next 10 years, you may find it in your heart to pay off the bet you lost this summer. Cheapskate.
You're listening to Sports Talk's 10th anniversary special. Back with more after these messages.
This is Jim Robson. As a frequent listener to Sports Talk, it's a pleasure for me to congratulate Dan Russell and his co-workers and his associates on the 10th anniversary of the show. And all the best for continued success.
Welcome back to the 10th anniversary Sports Talk special. 1 week before his hockey team began its most impressive journey, Vancouver Canucks owner Frank Griffith Sr. passed away. Sports Talk paid tribute. April 12, 1994.
He had a great life, and he loved the hockey team, as you know. But you know, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but he bought that hockey team for Mrs. Griffiths. It's really her hockey team, and she always says that. I had a nice talk with her just recently. And, you know, so she'll be there, and hopefully this club will be able to put it together, if not this year, soon, at least to get Mrs. Griffiths a Stanley Cup. It would be great. The family, they stepped up when they had to have somebody locally here buy this hockey team, and they went through some rough times, too, as you know, Danny. But nothing's easy in life. We both know that, and so does everyone else.
CKNW sports analyst Tom Larscheid.
Thank you, and now spotlight on sport.
One of Dan Russell's early supporters was legendary Vancouver sportscaster Big Al Davidson. March 11, 1988.
Like to see young persons come into this business, the business of sports reporting, do a great job and progress and are paid for doing a top job, sports. Usually it's through dedication, hard work, and pride of product. So many times I tune in the radio, TV, read newspapers overseas and in North America. It's a blessed joy to appreciate the best. Larscheid has fun in sport. McKeach is McKeach. Great heart, slow tongue, fine guy. None better than Jim Robson at play-by-play, and Jimmy works at it. We have a great one on the rise here at 600, and his ratings show he has been accepted by you, the listeners. Dan Russell started a sports talk show, and there were a few of those big shots who do little scoff. I didn't. The guy was in love with what he was doing, worked hard at his sports talk program. Dan would be the first to admit it was a little rough at first. Now Dan Russell has people in sport asking to be on his show starting at 10 in the evening, Monday through Friday. Our dean, Bill Good Sr., puts it best, I think. He says, Dan Russell asks a short, intelligent question, listens to the guest, and continues with continuity that makes sense, is entertaining, informative, and very listenable. Dan Russell's recent ratings attest to this. Good listenership. Great to see a fine young man on the rise who works his pants off. And eventually, it will pay off with big bucks for Dan Russell because he believes in what he's doing, works hard at it, and does it well. A top of the sports cap to OR's Dan Russell, a young sports reporter and broadcaster whom I think has a fantastic future. Here's to Dan, and that spotlight on sport.
When Big Al passed away, Sports Talk paid tribute. August 9, 1991.
Al died just before lunchtime today due to complications following exploratory brain surgery. He was 66 years old. Tonight on the program, we're going to hear from a number of people who worked for or up against Big Al. Everyone has a Big Al story in our business, and you're going to hear a few of them tonight here on Sports Talk.
There's one time Mel Cooper, who was now the CEO of RBC and owned C-Factor Radio in Victoria, he used to be our manager. He was the manager that hired me originally. he's taking a salesman, one of our sales reps from Montreal, through the station on a station tour, and CKNW is a pretty impressive layout when you walk somebody through it. And it was between the 5:30 news and the 5:35 spotlight on sport, and it was in late October, early November one year. And I walked in, Al's in the booth already, and he's tired. And I walk in, I forget what score I gave him, but it was irrelevant. It was a partial score of something or other. And I walked in the back door. Mel and this guy from Montreal, this bigwig, walked in the front door. So we all get introduced to each other in about maybe a 90-second period. Al says, Mel, am I going to Grey Cup? And he says, no, Al, we've already discussed this. He says, you're not going to Grey Cup this year. You know, for whatever reasons, financial or otherwise.
You're all in the booth here.
Yeah, now we walk out because Al's about to start. Now the guy walks in the back, and myself, Mel, and the guy from Montreal can all hear through the station intercom system that, you know, the show that's going on the air. The red light goes on. Good afternoon, Spotlight on Sport. Well, I worked for some cheap outfits before. And he goes and rips the station and Mel Cooper for not sending him the Grey Cup. I've been to 24 Grey Cups in a row, and I'm not going this year. Well, this guy from Montreal is embarrassed. Mel's embarrassed. I mean, it's just, he was and is a legend in his own time. I mean, what can I tell you? I'm just rocked a bit today about all this.
The world of sports is not only blessed by great athletes and key management figures, but also famous sports announcers. Danny Gallivan. June 7, 1989. This is Sports Talk. Here again on the Satellite Radio Network is Dan Russell.
And we thank you very much for being with us tonight. It's 18 minutes past 10 o'clock. We are welcoming to our Sports Talk microphones legendary broadcaster Danny Gallivan, who retired a few years ago after broadcasting hockey for 32 seasons. And in that time, the Montreal Canadiens won 16 Stanley Cups. As we welcome Danny to Vancouver, I know Danny has said many times you were lucky to be involved with such an outstanding team. How are you?
Well, first of all, Dan, I want to say that I'm pleased, terribly pleased, that you've invited me to your very popular program, I understand. How am I? I haven't felt better in many, many years.
You look great.
And this country out here is absolutely fabulous, beautiful country.
What does it take to be a good play-by-play broadcaster?
Well, first of all, I think you got to get the break. You got to be at the, to use the old cliche, you have to be at the right place at the right time. And that happened for me. If you get the break, then you get the job. You have to bring to it, I think, a tremendous enthusiasm and outstanding knowledge. In other words, study. Know what you're talking about, because the viewer and the listener, oh, they're so sharp. They can tell right away when there's a phony. So you have to know it. And you have to be able to speak with a degree of fluency. And these are the things. But the knowledge of the game, the knowledge of the players, the enthusiasm for the game itself.
You mentioned terminology. Your vocabulary was second to none. You made terms like cannonading, spinorama, paraphernalia, all a part of the hockey terminology. You had fun with those big words, didn't you?
Well, yes, but I took an enormous amount of criticism, and it hurt me at that time. I remember one night using that word cannonading, and it all happened because, and I can visualize it tonight as if it happened yesterday, Canadians were on a power play down the south end of the forum. They had Beliveau at center, Rocket on right wing, Dickie Moore on left wing, Harvey on the left point, and Boom Boom Jeffrey on the right point. And there was a false start by the linesman, and I had an extra 3 or 4 seconds. And if you give, I'm speaking for myself now, not for you. If you give a sportscaster 3 seconds to play with, boy, there's trouble. And I visualized Beliveau getting that puck to Jeffrey on, right to his stick at the point. And then off, you know, he had a great shot. Every player today shoots the puck harder than Jeffrey on, but in those days there was Jeffrey on, and the Gordy himself could shoot it, and Bobby Hull. But I visualized that coming back, and by golly, didn't it come back, and the boomer fired it. And I thought of something out of a cannon. I said a cannonading shot. And I knew right away that you'd have to be very charitable and look diligently to find justification for using the word cannonading. It hurt me. And then 3 or 4 days later, I got a letter from a pseudo-English professor, I think, very terse, to the point. He said, how dare you? There is no such word. And I wrote him back and I said, how dare you? There is now.
Los Angeles Dodgers announcer Vin Scully, March 31, 1987.
You have done World Series, All-Star games, perfect games, no-hitters. Is there anything you haven't done? Is there anything you haven't seen in this game yet?
Well, you know, Dan, it's a funny thing, but every time you think you've seen it all, lo and behold, something else pops up. And I guess that's why it's such a great game. So I might think I've seen it all, but something will happen in 1988, and I'll say, my gosh, there's something else I've never seen. That's the love of it.
NBC sportscaster Marv Albert, November 3, 1993.
You would do two events in one day.
There were cases of, and I question my, you know, when I think back to why I did it, but I felt an obligation where I would have, say, a Knick game and maybe a football game the same day, and I would push myself. And I guess the most severe example would be three games in one day. I did a doubleheader of, it was an NIT, a basketball game at the Garden, then I did another, it was a Knick game at night. Now, that is really sick. but these days, it's rare where I would do, you know, two in a day. It might be if I had a football game in New York and a Ranger game at night, you know, maybe I would combine. But
and Marv, enjoy the hockey game tonight.
Dan, thank you very much, and I look forward to someday coming to broadcast a NBA game of the week on NBC in Vancouver, British Columbia.
Hockey Night in Canada host Ron McLean, April 23, 1991.
Now I got to ask you this: you hook up with Don Cherry every Saturday night during the regular season. What's it like traveling with this guy for 10 or 15 days in a row?
Really tough. You know, for the players, double overtime. That's what this is like for me. It just seems like I'm sweating more, I'm getting grumpier, it's just really been miserable, I can't tell you how. In fact, when you put me on hold when I first got the call from the Scotch producer and I was sitting there and Cherry was on the grape line, I thought I was having a nightmare.
Don Cherry is here at our Sports Talk headquarters. Hi, Grapes.
Well, dude, how you doing, Dan Boy?
I'm doing fine. Welcome to Vancouver. You don't get out here enough.
No, I don't know why we go to L.A. I can't figure it out. We go to L.A. all the time. I think the guys like the weather down there or something, but should be coming out here more.
Brian Burke is on this program every single Wednesday.
Oh, Brian loves me.
Well, I was just going to say, he's not in town tonight. He's out scouting.
Oh, darn it. That's too bad.
Yeah, well, I wanted you to just, you know, let loose about Pavel Bure again a little bit.
Well, no, I'm not. I just, see, Dad, I just speak facts. I don't pull things out of the air. He's got 5 goals. So you say, well, he's only got 5 goals, then he must be a playmaker, right? And, well, how many assists does he have? Well, he's got 5 assists. Well, okay, then he's not a playmaker. Then he must be a fighter. No, he's not a fighter. Well, he must be a good checker. I didn't see him on the ice the last 5 minutes, I don't think. Well, he must block shots. Oh, what does he do? He doesn't score. I mean, he's getting $2.65 million, but he's adjusting.
Famed cricket announcer Henry Blofeld, March 19, 1992.
We are going to head to Auckland, New Zealand live, where it's many, many time zones away. That's where the World Cup of Cricket is being held. And with us on the phone line, Henry Blofeld, who is the Dean of Cricket Announcers, the Vin Scully, the Jim Robson of cricket, if you will, the guy who most people in England who love cricket love to listen to the most. Henry Blofeld joins us live from Auckland, New Zealand. Henry, thanks for joining us on Sports Talk.
My dear Dan, it's a great pleasure. It's lovely to be with you.
Well, I got to tell you that you and I don't share the love of cricket in common, only because I'm a very ignorant cricket fan. But I know you're going to get me loving the game here in just a moment. I got to ask you first, who won between England and Zimbabwe?
Well, I thought you'd get that in. Zimbabwe won. It was marvelous. They won by 9 runs. It was a wonderful result for them. It really has made their whole journey out here worthwhile. They're the only side in the World Cup, the only one of the 9 sides who doesn't play test match cricket, and it was a tremendous fillip for their cricket.
But cricket play-by-play is something that we don't hear very much of here on radio. Now, if I was to ask you, just if you could, Henry, to give our listeners here a sampling of what it would sound like, say, for instance, if Ian Botham was coming up to face Imran Khan, the Wrath of Khan from Pakistan, how would you describe something like that?
Righto. We're back at Lord's Cricket Ground in London, and it's Imran Khan bowling from the pavilion end on this famous ground, the pavilion glaring down on proceedings. It's a cloudless day. There are 25,000 people here, and it's Imran Khan. He's accelerating in this 25-yard run. He's up the wicket. He bowls to Botham. Botham ducks. It was a bouncer, another bouncer, and through it goes there to Moeen Khan, the Pakistan wicketkeeper, who throws the ball away to Javed Miandad in the gully. It finds its way back through mid-off. We've got Salim Malik there, and back to Imran Khan, who paces back quite briskly, his 25 metres back towards the pavilion, and he turns again, and here he is galloping in, fully 25 yards, he's up the wicket now, he bowls it short again, Botham hocks, and that's going away for four into the mound stand, first bounce for four, Botham goes to 50, and England 173 for four. How's that, Irving?
our listeners have never heard that before, Henry. That is excellent.
Well, that's just about how it happens.
Well, yeah, actually, I just want to ask you, Philip Till, one of our consultants over here about cricket in North America, he was telling me that Henry Blofeld, sometimes when there's a little lull in the action, you'll actually describe how the pigeons are flying across the stadium?
Yeah, the pigeons, the seagulls, the beautiful ladies, the miniskirts, their hairstyles, the earrings. I get it all in, you know. And I think you've got to paint the whole picture, what the crowd are doing, what the clouds are doing, the aeroplanes in the sky. You've got to paint the whole picture. The middle is the cricket and all the rest is the circumference.
And do listeners sometimes bring cakes for you to eat in the broadcast booth?
They bring cakes, but more important, they sometimes bring bottles of champagne.
Vancouver Canucks announcer Jim Robson, November 2, 1989.
Well, what about Hockey Night in Canada? A lot of people have asked me that. How come Jim isn't on television?
Yeah, I was disappointed the way things went. I had hoped to be doing in my career what Bob Cole is doing today. Every Saturday night, coast to coast on the Hockey Night in Canada and the Stanley Cup playoffs. Now, you talk about a perfect job.
That's
that's the perfect job. And that's even better than the one I've got, I think. But a few years ago, Hockey Night in Canada made some changes in their people, and we had a meeting in Toronto. It was when the NHL draft was in Toronto. So what year would that be? Jimmy Sandlack was the Canucks' first pick. What, 85 would it be?
Right.
I think so. So we had a meeting there, and they told me that Bob Cole was their number one man and would then be doing the national games, that Don Whitman was number two and would be doing Western games and some national games if the situation came up. Their number three man was Dick Irvin in Montreal, and the remaining games, which would be very few, would be split between Chris Cuthbert in Edmonton and myself, and that would be about four games. But they did want me to do the games in Vancouver, which was like, three or four games. That's when the Canucks play Saturday night at home. So basically, that's where they put me on their list. And, of course, that's a blow to the ego. I thought it was a little better, but they're all good people that they have working there, so I was disappointed. So at the same time, BC TV decided that they would have approached me about doing the Canuck games.
Hall of Fame broadcaster Jim Robson has not only entertained hockey fans for over three decades, but also hockey players. Ryan Walter and Cliff Ronning, November 27, 1991.
I grew up listening to Jim Robson. I mean, his mom and dad would tell me to turn the radio off, and I'd try to obey, but most of the time I'd be listening to Jimmy all night long.
Mm. How about you, Cliff?
Well, I think I've always been a diehard Vancouver Canuck fan, and many nights I listened to Jim Robson with the lights out and pretending I was asleep listening to the games.
Kerber's passing on the left wing to Courtnell, up to Ronning, right side at center, in over the line, winding up, he shoots, he scores! Cliff Ronning with 2:31 left, and it's 6-5 Vancouver.
I mean, I used to wear the Vancouver Canuck pajamas to bed. I mean, I was, you name it, that was me. And go to the games with my dad, and I mean, a lot of young boys or whatever playing road hockey, we always pretended we were one of the Canucks, or Richard Brodeur was a big name at the time when everyone wanted to play goal, and Thomas Gradin and Stan Smeal, guys would be elbowing guys when they were playing Stan Smeal. Everyone, it was kind of funny because guys would take characteristics of different players, like Thomas Gradin, the guy would be running real fast and dangling, passing the puck, would never shoot, and then, you know, like, and then the odd time putting Glenn Hanlon in net, you know, doing stacking the pads and then making the big save, but it was lots of fun.
Now the puck is put in over the Vancouver line to Ellick. His pass tipped off a stick, and out comes Trevor Linden. Carries to center ice, down the middle, into the King zone, passes it off to Courtnell, back to Merzen, he shoots, the rebound's in front, Ronning's right in,
he did it,
scores! Cliff Ronning! Ronning scores in overtime! He's riding the stick at center ice. The Canucks win 2-1 after 3 minutes and 12 seconds of overtime. And Vancouver leads Los Angeles 2-1.
Hi, this is Ron Wilson of the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim. Dan, congratulations on 10 years, and I hope in 10 years, while I'm still with the Mighty Ducks, that you're still doing your job.
20 years after hockey's greatest event, Sports Talk asked its listeners where they were when Paul Henderson scored hockey's biggest goal. Among the Canadians that were in Moscow for this historic series were Jim Coleman and John McKittrick. Coleman was covering the event for his newspaper. McKittrick attended as an outnumbered spectator. September 28, 1992.
I was there as a tourist. We had no contact with the media whatsoever. We had no idea what was going on behind the scenes. We did not know about the juggling of the referees or anything else. We saw the Soviets as entirely different people. We saw them as average people. They really wined and dined us.
I was a mere kid of 61.
I was just going to say, yeah, you were 61 then.
I was probably the oldest of the media people there, with the possible exception of Foster Hewitt, who might have been a year or two older than me. But at the end of the game, I found myself a nice, dignified old gentleman of 61 in my sincere blue suit, three-piece blue suit. I was standing up on my seat, and I was pointing up at Brezhnev, Comrade Brezhnev, the head of the Soviet Union, and I was giving him exactly the same salute that Al Eagleson had given to the crowd about 15 minutes earlier.
My goodness, that's a great story. So sometimes, you know, I think the media people sort of have this image of sort of having to be neutral, but I think in this one, that kind of went out the window.
Well, there was no neutrality there. It was, you got to remember, as Alan was saying earlier, this was 1972. The Russia, the Soviets, were still the big bad bears. The Cold War was on. The Berlin Wall was up. These were the enemy. And they, as Alan emphasized, and he was completely right, they did everything in their power to beat Canada by fair means or foul.
You're listening to Sports Talk's 10th anniversary special. More to come after these messages.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York.
Pleasant good evening from New York City. Welcome to the Monday night Stanley Cup final edition of Sports Talk on Rock 101 CFMI.
The very heart of it, New York, New York.
That's clearly a 20 after 4 comment.
I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill, top.
Sports Talk, hello.
Yeah, this is the Battery Woman.
Oh. I'm going to call you Miss Duracell.
Oh, okay. Well, the radio is in the fridge. It's in.
Perfect.
It's in the fridge. It's done. Where's Oofy tonight?
Where is Oofy?
I have visions of him buck naked.
If I can make it there, I'll make it.
Five solid reasons for our Vancouver listeners why the Rangers are better.
Messier, Richter, the Duck, Mike Keenan, and the Ranger fans.
Now Vancouver start back. Pavel Bure's at center. To the New York line on the right. Stops inside the blue line. Passes to Lume. Moving in. Passed it off. It's heads in front. He scores!
had a celebration planned here in New York. Boy, did they ever. You should have seen the plans.
Is this what happens at 4:30 in the morning?
I think he's giving up the rebounds. And
sir.
Hello?
Hello. What's your first name?
My name's Graham.
Graham?
Yep.
Are you usually up at this time of day?
No one in Vancouver should be mourning or depressed over what happened tonight. We do have a cup. We have the Western Conference Cup. And that's more than Calgary or Toronto has.
I haven't seen Burry take many face-offs. He's taking a big one now. Burry against McTavish. They battle in the circle. Puck goes to the corner. The game is over. And the New York Rangers have won the Stanley Cup for the first time since 1940, defeating the Vancouver Canucks 3-2 in a classic climax to a great series.
Tonight we have shared with you some of our fondest memories and proudest moments. The Sports Talk 10th Anniversary Special has been produced by Scott Woodgate along with Steve Snellgrove. I'm Al Jordan. Thanks for listening.
So when we first changed stations years ago, it was this Frank Sinatra song that ushered us out. It seems apropos to do so again as we dim the lights for the CKNW Sports legacy, such as it's been, and it's been a huge one over the decades. Our time on CKNW is now drawing to an end, but Sports Talk will continue on another radio station with an announcement coming very soon. Again, our thanks to Scott Woodgate and Steve Snellgrove, who produced the last 3 hours, the great voice of Al Jordan. Do you remember the long-standing tradition of this show when we concluded our proceedings wondering, hey, Dan, who would be playing in the band? Well, we bring it back tonight because our orchestra pit is crowded with Sports Talk's loyal listeners. And here for the final time, you'll hear our Sports Talk theme music on CKNW. For Heath Morgan, this is Dan Russell saying so long for now. Good night from Sports Talk.